Good morning. Welcome to a Learn IT to Teach podcast.
Good morning. Thanks.
And also introducing Pat Fahey, who's a professor at Athabasca University and is our evaluation consultant. Morning, Pat.
Good morning, everyone. Glad to be.
Stephen, you've written a lot about the value of blogging and the possible impact it can have on learning. Could you tell me what value do you see in blogging for newcomers to Canada who are in language and settlement classes?
Well, I think right off the bat, writing to their friends and family back where they came from in order to maintain ties and connections. I know that people think about, you know, accommodating and adapting to the new environment, but I mean, you know, I think of online communication first and foremost in terms of keeping touch back home. When I moved out to Alberta in 1980, I was cut off from my family, pretty much. You know, who can afford phone calls? But as time went by, I was able to use things like instant messaging and other contact forms to establish better communication with my family. And now we use a wide variety of things, and blogging is an essential tool in that. Then I guess there is, you know, the experience of adapting, making new friends. When you blog about a community and about your experiences in a community, because the content of that is searchable in a way that, say, Twitter tweets or Facebook status updates are not, people are in the community will find what you're writing and will be able to initiate contact with you and offer you support. So I think those would be the two major things that strike me off the top.
And in terms of language settlement or language learning, there may be some embarrassment about making mistakes in English or that kind of thing. How would a teacher introduce the notion of blogging in such a way as to reduce embarrassment and really encourage communication?
Well, what I do, I'm trying to learn French, and I'm working very hard at it, and so I do some writing in French, and then I check it against Google Translate. I know Google Translate isn't perfect by any means, but it's a good way for me to create something and check it against something and improve my language that way.
Sorry, I had a little technical issue there. Hold on a second. There we go.
Yeah, that's fine.
Google Language as a translator?
Google Translate. It's just translate.google.com. Works really well, and especially for Western European languages that aren't too idiomatic in expression, it works really well.
Yeah, I've used it a little bit learning French, actually. What I did was typed in something that I thought was accurate in French and then checked the accuracy by asking it to translate it into English.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea as well. Absolutely.
So within a classroom where you've got a peer network you want to encourage through online communication, say in a blended learning environment, what do you see as the value within the peer group?
Well, I think the shared experience of writing. Probably you're not going to have people in this peer group writing to each other so much in a public forum as in a forum that's more restricted to them. But what's important here is that the people writing back and forth are at a roughly similar level. And I think that makes a real difference, writing to people at a similar level, because they're making similar sorts of mistakes, they're using similar sorts of expressions in language, so their version of English, if you will, or their version of French, depending on the language that they're learning, will be recognizable to other people in that circle. But if you get people who are more advanced, the people who are less advanced, the people who are more advanced will be writing in French, the people less advanced won't be able to understand it. And the people who are less advanced writing French will be writing French that is, you know, kind of boring to the people who know French better.
You've written a lot about encouraging authentic blogging. But we're in a language classroom where obviously language skills are limited and teachers are teaching to specific language points.
Yeah.
So in that environment, how would a teacher encourage authentic blogging?
Well, it's hard because, you know they're not going to have the vocabulary to do the sorts of things that they want to do. But I think, you know, keeping the examples and the lessons grounded in actual work that they do or actual experiences that they have in their life will, over time, produce this authentic experience. That's common when you do, say, language training in the workplace. The language training is adapted to use the terminology and jargon actually employed in the workplace and to talk about real-world situations. And while the language at first may be a very simple version of the language, the situations described are accurate.
I see. So what about a student who says to the teacher, "I don't have anything to say, I don't have anything to blog about"?
Ask them to describe the room that they're sitting in. Everyone has something to say. All they have to do is look around and write about it, whatever it is. And that's pretty authentic, too, right? Because, yep, it's the environment they're in. So, you know, there is a white wall, there is a green plant, there is a red flag, there is grass outside. You know, I mean, there's always something to write about.
So you might start with those very mundane things and then encourage reflection on the whole newcomer experience. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Sure, or just reflection. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of like going from 0 to 60, right? There's reflection on the whole newcomer experience, but I think, you know, if they're in a certain situation, like sitting in a classroom, reflection on sitting in the classroom at that point in time would be more appropriate. If they're writing from their home, reflection on the environment they're writing from there. So you would ask them to describe their environment and then express an opinion about their environment, or to ask each other questions about their environment. The more complex things, like the experience as a person who's an immigrant, that comes later, but I mean, you're beginning to involve a lot of abstract concepts that are difficult to describe right away. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying anything, I think, unique here. I mean, I think we understand that somebody's knowledge of a language needs to be introduced gradually, and that the complexity of their expression increases gradually. So, and it's just a matter of tailing the aspects of authentic experience to the level that they're working at. That would be what I would say anyways. I'm not really an authority in language learning, but
does this play a role in helping people express reasoning and critical thinking in the target language, in this case, English?
Does what play a role?
The whole notion of blogging and the and the observation of, for example, the classroom or the home or wherever they're blogging from.
Well, what was the second part of that question? I'm really sorry, but I got stuck on the word "this" and never progressed beyond that.
I know you've written a lot about building reasoning and critical thinking skills. And,
right, okay.
And learning to do that in a new language is clearly a challenge for anyone. Would blogging play a role in helping someone find expression for what they're thinking about?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. The long answer is the learning of a new language itself is going to increase their critical thinking and logic skills, because they're not just learning a language through assimilation. They're learning a language deliberately, which means that, you know, they need to learn things like parts of speech and how to express themselves. This is something they learn naturally as a child in their first language. And, you know, as a child learning a language, you can express sentences and propositions and opinions and conditionals and the rest, you know, just off the cuff, because you just learn the expression by exposure to the language. In a new language, you need to understand what those linguistic forms are. So you need to understand, you know, the logical construction of an if-then expression, for example, the construction of an argument leading from a premise to a conclusion, because, you know, you have connectors that join these things, and you need to learn what those connectors are. And you're using those connectors, those various other indicator words, in order to understand what the other person is saying in that language that you're trying to learn. Writing out your expression in that language is putting you in a position now where you're deliberately using these connectors, these indicator words, these logical forms and structures. And as you're doing that, as you're writing these things out and using these things deliberately, you're increasing not just your facility in that language, but your facility with these logical indicators as well. So I would say using a form like blogging to learn a new language is going to improve your ability in more than just that new language.
I can't remember the source of this, but I remember somebody comparing the newcomer experience where you don't know the language to a kind of infancy. You're kind of helpless like an infant, unable to ask for what you want.
I don't know. I've been in other countries where I haven't known a word of the language. And, you know, I don't feel like an infant. I feel mute. And there is a difference, because I can still use gestures to indicate what I want. You know, I can draw pictures. I can point at things. I have a lot of expressivity that is not available to an infant. So, yeah, I wouldn't draw that comparison personally.
It's stretching a point, I guess.
I think so. And keep in mind, infants can't even point. You know, like, they've really got communication issues.
Still, there's a kind of frustration that comes when you have something to say and you just can't put it into the language you're learning.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I feel that one. Totally. But again, the infant point stretches the point, right? Because the infant hasn't formed the thought that he or she is unable to express. He or she is unable to express the thought because they haven't had the thought.
Right. Yeah. You've written also a lot about the role of creativity in learning.
Mm-hmm.
How a lot of immigrants come here with specific kind of economic goals and so forth. And how would you kind of make them stretch beyond those economic goals to kind of creatively engage with their new country?
Well, I mean, the best way to get people to stretch beyond economic goals is to ensure that they have economic security. And that's not just me saying this. Many people have said this. You know, I mean, the economic security is a condition for the possibility of civil society itself, as Patrick Watson in The Struggle for Democracy makes that observation, and I think it's quite true. So that would be my first and foremost thing, right? Address the economic insecurity. That said, if they're in a position where, you know, now they have some degree of economic security, then I think one of the great things about this society that they've landed in is that it is so creative. We live in a society that is a fountain of creativity. It's really amazing. And it's because people have the time to be creative, but it's also because we value creativity, we value independent expression in this country. And I think that, you know, and you're asking how would I encourage people to participate in that. And I think my best answer might not be the best answer, but my best answer would be something along the lines of exposing them to the creativity that already exists. You know, letting them see this modeled. You know, it's the old thing. It's almost like you have to give them permission to be creative, and give them permission to be creative in such and such a way. And you do that by showing other people doing that. I don't think there's any dearth of creativity in the people who are coming here from other countries. But there may be a hesitance to express that creativity. So, you know, getting them out to a karaoke session, you know, and karaoke is a great example of giving permission to participate, because, of course, what happens is sooner or later somebody goes up there and sings and they're really bad. And that gives permission to everyone else to sing, because nobody's going to be as bad as that person. And so, in comparison, everyone's going to be good. Sometimes people give permission by, expressing opinions in a public space. And once somebody does that, then other people feel free to express opinions in a public space. So, I mean, it's that sort of thing that I would be looking at. You know, first of all, addressing the economic conditions, then providing models or examples of ways to be creative.
And this is all on the path to finding new kind of engagement and new meaning in their lives in Canada beyond, as we discussed, the economic.
Yes. Yeah.
What are some of the best technologies for taking learning outside the classroom walls? For immigrants specifically?
Right off the bat, an iPod. Seriously. I mean, if it was up to me, I'd make sure every immigrant had an iPod or some such thing. And on that iPod was the guide to everything they need. And that would be, you know, all the addresses they need, all the contacts that they need, but also, you know, it would contain a dictionary and a phrase book, a little translator, or hit the icon to open Google Translate, maps, etc. You know, everything they need. Even a thing, because it's an iPod, right, maybe an iPhone, but it has something with a camera, so you can scan a barcode and it'll pop up all the information you need about to know about the product in your own language. I think that'd be really useful. So a single mobile device that they can carry with them that is their ambassador to the culture. And you know, I would encourage them to not only use it to understand, but, you know, now to begin to use it to feed back. Not necessarily to type things, because it's kind of awkward to type on an iPod, but to record their thoughts, feelings, and observations in audio, which could be shared with, you know, either their friends, family, or other immigrants. That would be my best answer to that question.
That's great. Pat, did you have anything you wanted to ask Stephen or comment on?
Sure. Thanks, Rob. Stephen, I know you may not be completely aware of this particular project, but we're trying to do some professional development with language teachers. Now, I know you do a lot of talking to teachers, and you've seen a lot of professional development efforts and so on. Do you have any thoughts on PD?
I've spoken on PD a number of times, and the first and main thing that I say to people is that they need to manage their own professional development themselves. It's really easy to fall into a pattern where your professional development is being managed by your employer or not being managed at all and sort of drifts away. And people need to take charge of their own professional development. And that includes, you know, that includes not simply signing up for courses or whatever, but actually cultivating a professional development environment for themselves where they're regularly exposed to materials, resources, contacts, whatever, that would act in a supportive way, that would improve their learning, their skills, their abilities in that field. And I typically say that this means something like engagement in a network, you know, of practitioners or even just friends. Doesn't really matter a whole lot, whereby you're sharing your experiences, you're sharing the resources that you find, you're sometimes connecting together for common activities. Basically, you're communicating about what you're doing with each other. And if what you're doing is your profession, then you're communicating about your profession together. And so this is, you know, the creation of an environment where now you have regular little micro professional development activities happening all the time. And it creates sort of a constant state of awareness in your mind that there's stuff happening in this field, there's new resources to learn, there's new techniques to learn, there's just ways of constantly improving your knowledge and your abilities in that field. And, you know, doing this for yourself, making sure you manage this for yourself is of crucial importance because that way you're able to attune your connections to resources and other people to those that are most appropriate to you, to those that maybe share your values or have the same way of seeing the world. You can ensure that the materials that are coming to you are relevant, that are useful to you. They're stuff you need and not just stuff you're simply your employer thinks you need. And the last thing is, by being in a network like this, you're not just receiving materials to read and assimilate, but you're receiving these materials or accessing these resources. And then because you're in the network, you're communicating your thoughts or your opinions, your impressions, your reactions or whatever to these resources, which means you're engaging and interacting with these resources. And in that way, creating a greater awareness and reflecting more on the content of those resources and how they apply to you and to your work.
Well, that's certainly consistent with what I've seen in any PD I've been involved with. What people consistently rate the highest is the social interaction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it's everything from what they call, you know, war stories to, you know, accounts of experiences. You know, you can only put so much in the former learning materials, in the formal learning materials. But there's so much of what there is to learn in a field that is, and I don't want to say tacit because that's not quite right, but not expressible as a formal principle but only understandable as a result of exposure to a long series of these stories, or these experiences, or these interactions. You could never express it as a principle, if X, then Y. But it's just this sort of general feeling, pattern, or impression about engagements or activities in the field that you acquire almost by osmosis, almost by, you know, an intuitive perception of patterns in these stories rather than an explicit abstraction of and statement of that pattern.
The target audience for this PD is language teachers, and they're sort of, I was going to say legendarily, but they're certainly not the first people you think of as technocrats, and they're not, and they don't want to become any, and we promise them, as Rob can confirm, we promise them we won't turn them into programmers, and we won't try and turn them into technologists and so on.
Yeah.
If you were dealing with this audience, are there good technologies? I know you've written about this. Are there good, usable, stable, always on, ubiquitous, and blah, 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 technologies that this audience would appreciate? It's kind of like the telephone, that you just grab it and use it.
Well, I mean, they're going to have some technological abilities, right? If all they can work with is a pencil and a paper and maybe a whiteboard or a flip chart, there's not a whole lot I can do for them. But, you know, if they can use a computer, and even better, use a computer with a camera and a microphone, so, you know, they have that minimal level of technology, then I think a whole world does open up to them. So I think they have to embrace this technology to a certain point. But you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people in language training haven't advanced beyond pencil and paper. And I think as a result, their techniques and tactics aren't going to advance as a result of new technology either. But, okay, that said, let's say they've gotten a computer and they can use the microphone and the camera. One thing right off the bat that just works is video conferencing. And there are different ways of doing it. Skype just works. Google Hangout just works. This environment, it's not really very visual, but Adobe Connect kind of just works. The sound isn't ideal, but, you know, sometimes not having ideal sound is good, because, you know, if you're always learning the language in an ideal sound environment, then if you get into a bad sound environment, you run into some trouble. But jury's out on that, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things, and in fact, I'm doing it just a little bit later this afternoon, is again, for my French learning, is I'm opening up a Google Hangout with myself, another French learner, and a French speaker. We'll open it up to anyone out there in the world who wants to speak with us in French. And we'll just practice our French for a couple of hours. And this is really good practice. And, you know, we have a French instructor with us who will help us and correct us when we've made errors in our French. But the idea is, you know, we try something, our error's corrected, we try it again, our error's corrected, but we're in this real environment with real people that we're talking to about real stuff in French, in this case. And, as I said, we've been using this so far, and it really has a lot of impact. You know, it's totally different from trying to learn French in a classroom. Just totally different. It's way more public. And it's way more it's way more engaging, I guess, is the best thing I would say. The other thing is, well, you know, I come back to Google Translate, but Google Translate just works, you know, and having that and practicing your writing, I think, is really useful.
That's good, and, you know, not to sell these instructors too short. They do appreciate that in order to interact, and then that's what they really value. They're going to have to get on the wagon, whatever that wagon turns out to be. So they, they appreciate the need to learn the technologies, and they're willing to do that. They just don't want to get to the point where they're sharpening their teeth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The other big thing I'm sure they've always used in the past is tape recorders with tapes of the language and different exercises. Those are really useful, of course, because, you know, you want to hear for yourself how words are pronounced. And these days, you know, tape recorders are a thing of the past, very much a thing of the past. So the whole idea of audio recording and recording examples, recording sound snippets, I think is a really useful technology.
Well, that kind of anticipates my next question, and then I'll kind of stop here, Rob. But it's about support, Stephen, just to give you the general context. We're trying to get, you know, and now we're up to several hundred of these people, and there's stages of the PD training. Stage one is kind of a global orientation, and they move into learning to actually use the tools, and then learning to author and learning to actually implement the learning management system, which is Moodle. And so we're trying to figure out what kind of support do these people need? How do you keep them going, especially from stage to stage? Because they're short of time, and they don't necessarily get any recognition for this. They certainly don't get any release time or anything. So any thoughts on support? How do you get people to appreciate that this is in their interest and it's going to help their students and so on, and to keep going?
Yeah. Save them time. You know, if every time they interact with this program, they come out of it with something that saves them some time or some effort, they're going to keep coming back. So there needs to be, you know, a series of concrete, applicable things that they can use. You know, I'm just thinking of, you know, for example, of phonetics. And one exercise that was very useful to me was just simply looking at word forms, hearing the sound, repeating the sound. So I'm sure people, you know, in the offices around me thought I was insane, but I'm going, eh, ooh, ah, you know, and just, you know, word form sounds. This can be automated. You know, you can create things that show the word, you know, show the combination of letters, play the sound, have the person repeat the sound. Something like that, made available to instructors, now saves them a lot of time, because they can have the person use that and practice with that. And then they come back and listen to their practice and make any corrections that are necessary. And so these phonetics exercises, which would originally have taken them, you know, several hours, now is taking them 15 minutes. Now, I'm just using this as an example, right? Again, because I'm not an expert in language instruction. But so what I'm saying is things like that will bring them back. Things that actually save them time, save them effort through some simple use of technology, that's the sort of thing that will bring them back in again and again.
That certainly makes sense. And, you know, one of the most compelling arguments to this audience is your students already expect this of you.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize that's true. The students know this technology, and they know that they're carrying it around. It's on their hip, it's in their pockets, in their purse, in their hand all the time. And so it's not a big deal to make the connection. Why don't you see if we can use this for learning and save some time from the classroom over what might just be general spray and pray kind of teaching.
Yeah.
And they resonate with that. They appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's good, right? Giving them resources they can send to their students' iPods, which of course they will all have because I've recommended it. you know, again, it's they're going to come back. Their students will have used their iPods to practice their phonics or phonetics, and that'll save them time. That's all in theory, of course. But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, well, the Keeners, you know, it's never 100%, but it's enough that they can see, yeah, I know for the people I can't get, who can't get enough, this is going to be another resource, and they buy that.
Yeah.
Good, Rob. I'm happy there.
Oh, good. Thanks, Pat. That was terrific. Just following up on that dialogue, as Pat's kind of indicated, it's a very tough environment for language and settlement teachers in Ontario right now. We went through a round of cutbacks this year. We've been promised another round of cutbacks for next year. Programs are being whittled down and shut down, and teachers are getting less release time for training. It's kind of a discouraging environment, and yet we're trying to introduce something that requires them to spend some upfront time on professional development or training.
Yep.
What would you say to them, Stephen, to kind of buck them up, you know, to encourage them to say why technology is important or why it's going to help them?
It's in the tough times that you even more need the greatest capacities at your disposal. You know, I mean, purely pragmatically, if you can use all the technologies to support your language instruction and thereby make your language instruction more effective or certain, or at the very least more liked by the recipients, then you're in a better position when opportunities are few. I mean, that's a pretty pragmatic and you know, not the nicest thing to be out there saying, but from a purely pragmatic point of view, the people who know the tech can use the tech to get results, get the jobs. So that would be my first message. My second message would be, you know, as you acquire this capacity, you acquire the ability to extend your reach more widely. You know, you're experiencing a slowdown because your major funder is cutting back, you know, and that's a bad thing. But if you're able to reach more markets, then you're not so dependent on this one major funder. And, you know, technology isn't something you just use in the classroom. Technology is something you use to interact with people around the world. And, you know, you can be reaching out to people and actually getting paid by these people who are planning to immigrate to Canada, who want to prepare before they get here, or who want to prepare in hopes of being able to immigrate to Canada, or in hopes of being able to immigrate to the United States. Right, you have this whole worldwide market you can tap into if you can use the technology. If you're using pencil and paper, flipboard and whiteboard, you're not reaching anybody outside the room. So, you know, technology creates more opportunities. It creates a larger marketplace for what you're trying to do, the instruction that you're trying to sell. So from a purely sales and marketing perspective, you want to be using this. And then finally, you know, you want your instruction to be effective. And I think there are good arguments to show that the use of technology helps make learning more effective. It makes it more engaging. It makes it possible to learn more independently. And it allows for the employment of new, previously impossible instructional tasks, like this, you know, online Google Hangout, and all of these combined to make your learning more effective. So that's basically what I'd be saying to them.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We've got a lot of interesting thoughts to digest. Just one last question, Stephen. How would you like to be described when I write the intro for the podcast?
Glowingly?
Of course.
Doesn't matter. You know, my information's on my website. Whatever you think is accurate. Strive for accuracy.
I'll check it with you, whatever I come up with.
Sure, but, you know, almost certainly, whatever you come up with, I'm going to say, yeah, that's cool. You know, unless you make a factual error, right? So, you know, but as long as you're not making any factual errors, I'm cool with whatever you have to say.
Good. Did you have anything else, Pat, for today?
Not really. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, Stephen. It's been a while, but good to connect again.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know you two knew each other.
Well, we do, kind of, but we've run into each other here and there, but it's been some time, and I know that you've moved around, and are you still at the National Research Council now?
I'm still at the National Research Council, and I'm still based in Moncton, and I haven't been in Central Canada for quite a while now. It's actually been more than a year, you know, except for, you know, going through Montreal or Toronto Airport, which doesn't count.
Doesn't really count. I was having lunch. I was having a beer actually with Terry Anderson and George Siemens the other night, and we just one of us mentioned your name and who's seen you lately, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've been traveling a bit, but not so much inside Canada. Almost all my travel recently has been to Europe, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
All the budgets
are
cut.
If you do yourself in Ottawa, you'll let me buy you lunch,
free
beer
food
or whatever.
Yeah. Rob knows all the good places too.
I do. Yeah. Well, thanks again.
Well, you're very welcome. Look forward to seeing it on air.
Yeah, and I'll do an MP3 and run it past you, Stephen, if you would prefer.
Yeah, again, that's not necessary.
Into two or three pieces, though.
Yeah. I have a recording of it here. So if your system's failed, I can give you a backup. But, you know, your recording's going to be the same as my recording, except maybe edited. So I'm sure it's going to be fine.
Great. Well, I'll let you know. I'll check the quality.
All right.
Great. Thanks, Pat.
My pleasure, Rob.
Thanks, Stephen.
No problem.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.